Okay. Hello, everyone. This is episode 6 of the First Hour Podcast. Yeah, it's been a little while, but it's good to be back, and hopefully you won't have to wait this long for the next episode. Today, we're going to hear from Greg Noe about the rating system on the site, Ian Bagley will drop in to talk about Fallout 3 and getting great deals on older games, and Mike Thornton introduces us to a new segment called The Retro Vibes.
I guess I consider a 9 to be excellent, a 10 to be a stellar game, and I guess I should point out that a 5 is actually average on my score, or on my scale, as opposed to something like IGN or GameSpot, where like what a 7 or 8 is typically average.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's like in college classes where supposedly C is average, D is poor, B is good, and A is, like, excellent, but, like, you get classes where, like, A should be average, you know?
Yeah.
Like, if you don't get an A, there's a problem. I find that's
I wish I had more of those classes, but...
Well, I think I only had, like, my English classes were like that. Like, if you didn't get an A, there was a problem, but usually it was more like B would be... Anyway, but yeah, that's a lot of game scores are like that. You're like, 7 is average, you know, and...
It's a bit unfortunate.
Yeah.
You've got all those numbers to work with. Yeah, exactly. So I think, I guess I'd rather see a little more honesty in the review from the professional reviewers. But, and that's part of the, you know, my recent dilemma is now that I'm getting review copies, how do I keep, you know, my personal integrity? You know, does having the review copy influence the score? I mean, obviously. Definitely it should not.
Right.
And I'm trying not to let that play into the score I give it at all. But, I mean, I guess, you know, part of me wants to drop the score totally.
Yeah.
But I like having that kind of, you know, I can say that, you know, this game was an 8 and it was better than this game that was a 7 in my mind.
Yeah.
Kind of like having that substance, that numerical value behind, you know, the game. Some games I haven't been scoring lately, but a couple of the indie games I reviewed, not that because, you know, they're just, you know, because they're indie games and not, you know, AAA titles, but just because, you know, they just did something so unique that I didn't even know how to score it, so.
Yeah.
Don't look at the end of the score too much, it's all about the actual review of the text, so.
And even then, I guess once you read the text, you can kind of tell for yourself. But even then, you know, just because a reviewer doesn't like a game doesn't mean you're not going to like the game.
Yeah, exactly. So, and you got to have an opinion for yourself. And it kind of helps to know how reviewers, you know, if they like a certain genre or something. So
exactly.
I consider myself pretty open to most genres. Over the last few years, though, I've become more antagonistic towards Japanese RPGs. But
no. One of the writers of FirstHour.net. Ian, what have you been playing lately?
Basically, right now, I've been playing Fallout 3.
Okay.
That's pretty much the main game I've been playing right now. I play for the Xbox 360. I owned Fallout and Fallout 2.
Okay.
And I never played it.
Really?
I got it from a store in St. Louis. It's called Deals.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is that everything is $1.
Okay.
And I bought Fallout 1 and 2 for $1.
Wow.
And I also bought Tribes 2 for $1, XCOM UFO Defense for $1. It was a ball. You just go in there and you're like, well, I have $3.
I got Fallout, and I think Fallout and Fallout 2 together from Good Old Games. Have you been to that site? GOG.com?
No.
What they do is they take old games, they get the rights to them or whatever, and then they package them in an executable file that'll run on new operating systems, because a lot of those games you can't run on the new, you know, like, especially not Windows 7 or Vista, but even XP would have trouble with them, but they redo, I don't know if they put like a shell around it, or they redo the code or something so that it will run on the newer systems, and then they sell them for like $5. So it's a really good deal. It's not quite as good of a deal as getting it for a dollar, but...
Right. But, well, the only problem with that, though, is that you're guaranteed to get it, you know, to get it working pretty much.
Yeah, that's
and I bought
true.
XCOM UFO Defense because I grew up with that game.
Uh-huh.
And I bought it, and it was for DOS.
Ah.
And I used to know how to work DOS.
Right.
Good Old Games sounds like I'll have to hit that up. It's just goodoldgames.com.
I think it's GOG.com, actually, GOG.com. But they have, I mean, they have a bunch of stuff. A lot of it is kind of obscure, like games you've never heard of before. But it's nice, too, because sometimes there'll be an old game that you like that you can't get anywhere else because nobody's ever heard of it, you know. But they might have it on here. And I think the most expensive they have is like $10, and that's for the newer ones, which, I mean, some of their games are probably early 2000s. I mean, like, Beyond Good and Evil's on there, and I think it came out in 2002 or 3. Prince of Persia, Sands of Time is on there. But most of them are old, like, early to mid-90s games, DRM-free. Once you buy it, you can download it as many times, like, on as many computers as you want or anything like that. Usually they come with, like, wallpapers and icons and stuff like that just for fun. But yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So you said you were playing Fallout 3.
Yes.
And how is that going for you?
I'm actually pleasantly surprised by this game.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really know what Fallout was. I'd watched my brother play Fallout a couple of times, but never really got into it. And I came down here for a visit, actually, in Texas. And my wife was working while I was just visiting.
Mm-hmm.
So what would happen is that I would, I got my sleep scheduled to where I would sleep while she was at work, and then I'd wake up, we'd hang out, she'd go to sleep, and then I would just play video games until she woke up, and then I'd go to sleep. And her brother kept, you know, I didn't have an Xbox, so he, whenever he would go to sleep, he'd leave the Xbox out for me. And he kept telling me, play Fallout 3, play Fallout 3. And he kept telling me to play it, but I had played Morrowind and Oblivion.
Yeah.
And I had no idea what Fallout 3 was, right?
Okay.
Like, at all. I didn't know that Bethesda had made it, and I had no idea of the background except that you shot a lot of the time. So I put it in the system, and I'm sitting in the complete darkness other than the glow of the TV.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting in this real rickety old armchair, and I got a Mountain Dew, I'm pretty sure, and it starts loading, and it says Bethesda, and I'm like, wait, Bethesda, I love Bethesda, and then it starts with the intro that war never changes and everything, and I had no idea the importance of that, because it's in every one of the Fallouts,
right.
It says, you know, it gives the intro of war never changes, and I watched that. And I'm like, well, this is pretty cool, post-apocalyptic.
Yep.
I kind of figured that from the Fallout theme, or the Fallout name. And I loaded on there, and, you know, I'm like a little baby, and I'm walking around and stuff like that, and it's just like Oblivion. Right,
yeah.
Whenever you start, because you have to do something before you create your character.
Okay.
And I finally create my first character, and he was terrible, really. He was mostly a shooter guy, because you have a choice between small guns, which are like from a pistol to a sniper rifle, and, you know, assault rifles, and then you have big guns, which are, you know, mini guns. You have a Gatling laser gun, rocket launcher, and then you have explosives, melee weapons, and you know, all kinds of stuff. And I built my character, and I worked way too long on making him look cool, which you never really look at him, but first time you walk out of the vault and your eyes are focusing, you know, because it's super bright because you've never been outside before, and I'm like, this is the coolest thing I've played in years, and you know, and I'm walking around, and I haven't really used my gun a whole lot. I killed a bunch of people in the vault during my escapes, and your father escapes in the game, but I hadn't used bats yet, actually, which is the kind of cutting edge technology of the Fallout 3 game, is that you have vats where you can target all kinds of stuff. I mean, you can target their head, their chest, all their limbs, and if they're, like, throwing a grenade, they can whip out their grenade and you can shoot it in their hand and do extra damage. And you get multiple shots and everything, and it'll run out. You have the action points, much like Fallout 1, but it's, you know, it's added differently. So, you know, I'm walking right whenever you walk out of the vault, you're supposed to go to this town named Megaton, which is kind of a big town. But before that, there's a town called Springvale, which I went through, and I went to a shack. Some girl yells at me saying that I'm with this guy named Moriarty, and I'm like, you know, I choose the jerk response, so she tries to kill me, and I shoot her in the head and steal a bunch of her stuff. And I go into this elementary school, and I only have, like, I have a pistol with, like, maybe 80 rounds of ammo, and I walk into the school, and there are guys with sawed-off shotguns and assault rifles and stuff. And I'm like, this game is awesome. This is what I've always wanted, because I always wanted some kind of first-person shooter in Oblivion style, because, you know, the open world is what's really enticing to me. Because I played, you know, a lot of the turn-based RPGs, Super Mario RPG, the Final Fantasy, a lot of the Final Fantasies. I played Chrono Trigger recently. I just played that, and, you know, I've played a lot of them, but the only thing that I've always hated about them is that while they're linear, but they're not completely linear, where you have to figure, you know, you're restricted to the certain amount of space, and you have to figure out puzzles and stuff, and I always kind of disliked that, especially mostly as a kid, because I was never smart enough to really figure it out, so I was kind of, you know, I just want to kill things, kill the boss, and that stuff. So with this one, you know, it tells you where your quest goals are. It, you know, you got all kinds of weapons, you're completely open, and the story's really great. You've got tons of quests. My current game right now on my Xbox, on my hard drive, is I've played my character for 102 hours right now. And I mean, even with Ogre Battle, the first time I played it, I only spent about 80 hours on it. And that was a lot of just leaving it on while I went to school because I didn't have time to save and stuff like that.
I don't know if... I think the only game I've played for... Okay, that keeps time that I know of for sure that I've played for over 100 hours is Super Smash Bros. Melee. But I think I have some old PC games that I had probably put in more than that. But that's a lot of time.
The only game I've played more than that was Pokemon. Okay. Played on a Pokemon Red because I was in like fifth grade. So that was the big thing. And then I also played World of Warcraft for an accumulated time of 55 days. Yeah, so you can imagine. I actually had a friend of mine. He, with all of his characters combined, played over a year's worth of time in game.
That's insane.
And he quit. Yeah, well, he said it was one of the most depressing things he ever heard of, so he quit cold turkey. And, but, I mean, Fallout, for its time, really, because I'd played a couple of games for the Xbox. I played Halo 3, because I was really big in Halo 1. But Fallout, I mean, I'm really impressed.
And on the retro side of things, I was able to pick up Cave Story.
Oh yeah.
For the WiiWare on Monday this week, and so far so good. It's there's just those 2D games. They have like a tightness to them where it feels so refined. Like, I don't know if you can visualize this, or maybe some of our readers can, but you know in Mario how you can run. And he kind of slides, like there's some physics to it. And like you can kind of push back on the controller when you're in the middle of a jump in the air to not go so far. And you're kind of like, if you're doing a speed run, you're running through it, and you can kind of hit back every now and then, and he'll kind of, you know, you can hit those jumps just perfectly, and it gets addicting. It's just that precise 2D gameplay. Yep. And that's what I really love about Cave Story and games like Mega Man 9 and 10. They're just precise. And Cave Story, it's kind of like Metroid. You get weapons, you get life capsules, which ups your life, and it's basically like Metroid. Not quite the sci-fi setting. It's a really good game. The controls are precise. It's challenging. It's just one of those fun 2D games that you can sit down and just, you know, relax to. No cutscenes. No waste of time. And the story is kind of intriguing. Japanese stories, they're always so different. And I just don't understand where they come up with some of this stuff. It makes no sense. But it's a really, really good game. So I recommend anybody who's got the retro vibe kicking to take a look at it and download it.
Cool. That's Wii. Is it only on WiiWare?
It was actually a PC game. It came out in 2004. Oh. I think it's on, as far as the consoles, I know it's only on WiiWare. But it was I think you can download it for free if you want to check it out. It's a 2004 release on the PC. It was created by one man. He's a Japanese guy. And it's kind of like the, you know, World of Goo story. It's created by, like, I guess it was two guys who created that, huh?
Yeah, it was.
It was just one Japanese guy, and I guess it was kind of an, you know, a heart to all those retro games, and it's just really, really polished. They actually pushed the release date back, and they fine-tuned the graphics. They kind of put it at a higher resolution and redid the soundtrack. Mm-hmm. But there is an option where you can go in there and change it. Back to the original PC graphics and PC engine sound.
That's interesting.
For the purist, So definitely worth checking out.
Cool.
And I know the other day we played NBA Jam, which that brought back some serious memories.
Yep.
And it made me even more excited for NBA Jam that's coming out for the Wii.
Yeah, I know. I went back and read the article in Nintendo Power about it.
I mean, I love how they do the photos on that thing. It brings back the retro vibe so much with those big heads and like how they used photorealistic pictures of the players' heads and pasted it on the bodies. And they have a blur. I think they have like five or six transitions, you know, angry, you know, all that stuff, and it'll blur their transition, so it doesn't look quite so paper dollish. So I'm really excited about that. And I never touch sports games, so NBA Jam got
That's
me.
That's one of the only sports games that I really like enjoyed playing and would come back to.
But you know, we played that when we were little. But nowadays, I mean, we don't even give them a shot. I wonder why when we were little, we played NBA Jam. Like, it just, I guess we didn't have those biases.
I mean, a friend of mine just had the game, and we just kind of went through and played all of his games, you know, at one point or another. And I had fun with that one, and I borrowed it and played it a lot. I guess, I mean, I didn't have anything against basketball at the time, so I was willing to give it a shot.
And on, I guess they didn't have too many two-player cooperative games on Super Nintendo.
Yeah, where you were both playing. There weren't a whole lot of games besides like Mario Kart and stuff where you were playing two people at the same time. Well, even Mario Kart, it was competitive. So yeah, the two-player simultaneous cooperative thing.
Yeah, I mean, I can't think of any really besides like Contra 3 and Secret of Mana. I think that was why it was so cherishing, is because you could just get with a friend and go through a whole tournament together, and it really, you remember Bill Clinton and all the unlocks?
There was,
I hope they put in a few celebrities on this next iteration.
Well, there was a in the interview with the creator, he said that the way they had set up the system, it was really easy to swap out a new character, and so that in their own studio, they were playing as all these crazy characters that they couldn't put in the game because they didn't have rights to them and stuff. But I believe it was some famous basketball player who wasn't featured in the game.
He ordered
like an arcade cabinet of NBA Jam with himself in it. Like he made this stipulation that he had to be in the game, and so they just stuck him in and shipped it to him. And there's like only one version of the game that actually has him in it.
Yeah, and I think actually following that up, Michael Jordan then called and said, "Why am I not in the game?" And they didn't put him in because he was playing baseball at the time.
Was that when that was?
I think so. And they didn't have the rights because he was under baseball license. But they actually did end up making a custom cabinet.
Maybe that's who it was.
But then they give it to a lot of players. A lot of players started requesting custom NBA Jam ROMs with themselves in
it. So. I mean, that's so funny. Like, you could never have that now. And that's it for another episode of the First Hour Podcast. You can contact us by emailing podcast@firsthour.net.